The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. We're streaming this over the Internet, so you can watch today's program if you choose by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. A week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I had on Dr. Nancy Turner Banks, and we were talking about problems in medicine, and now today she is back. She's just returned from an international AIDS conference, and we're going to talk about conversations on energy metabolism, the future of medicine, and how we can stay healthier. She was the one talking about AIDS and opium and greed and bad research and bad medical models. She's an outstanding person, and she's a board-certified physician, Harvard Medical School, board-certified in three different fields. She's an OBGYN and gynecological oncology and professor. So she also graduated with an MBA in finance, and she has a deep understanding of the history of medicine. So that will be a very interesting conversation in about 20 to 25 minutes when she makes herself available, and we'll speak to her. A lot of different short commentaries today, and then I would like your feedback. I'll share the commentaries, some by myself and others, and then you can call in and tell us what you think. All right, I'll be talking about how appointments are made to our government and taking back the power to have control over our own lives. Also, did you know that in some states it's actually against the law for you to collect rainwater on your own property? If you went out with a cup and held your cup up when it was raining on your front porch, do you know if that's against the law? That's right. How do we get to where we have so many stupid laws? I was recently in Bermuda. I was invited to be the keynote speaker and at a Women's International Conference on Film and to debate the entire island's health hierarchy, medical doctors, which I did, and I screened Autism Made in USA for them. And what was interesting was not the debate, because they were grossly misinformed. They had no facts. It was embarrassingly bad. They were just so inept. And there was a whole group of them, all doctors and Minister of Health and the whole thing. It was their houses that fascinated me. Every single house that I saw on the island had a way of collecting water and bringing it down through these soffits into their basement, into a holding tank. Really neat. Why aren't we doing that? They do it to perfection. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. I'm not finished right now. It'll probably take me another 6 months to finish my new film, which is a sequel to The Drugging of Our Children, on pathologizing childhood. And in it, I discuss what it means to be a kid today. And I went back to my hometown in Parkersburg, West Virginia, went up to the old farm that we spent our summers on, overlooking the Ohio River near Blennerhassett Heights, spoke with people who were my neighbors then, and got to walk the neighborhood, talking about what it was like with my buddies and what we did, and what we learned, and what happens if we made a mistake, or what happens if we weren't polite, the development of character, being in the Boy Scouts for 10 years, and helping with Boys Club, and all the other things that develop character and responsibility. And interviewed teachers. Totally different today. And so I'm interviewing the greatest generation, our parents, and at least those who are alive, our grandparents, and then reading from texts from our founding fathers what it was like to be a parent and a child and a teenager. And some issues are virtually the same. But how we deal with these stages of our life are not. Today, we don't allow a child to be a child any longer. A child is a prisoner to our fears and our culture. They're also captive to the pharmaceutical giants. And this is just an extension of that captivity. Quote, mental health experts ask, who will anyone be normal? From Reuters, an updated edition of the Mental Health Bible for Doctors may include diagnoses for so-called disorders such as toddler tantrums and binge eating. And, quote, it means that soon no one anywhere will be classed as normal. Leading mental health experts gave a briefing yesterday to warn that a new edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is being revised now for publication, could devalue the seriousness of mental illness and label almost everyone on the planet as having some kind of disorder, citing examples of new additions like mild anxiety depression, or psychosis risk syndrome, or temper dysregulation disorder. They said many people previously seen as perfectly healthy could in future be told they are ill. Quote, it's leaking into normality. It is shrinking the pool of what is normal to a puddle, said Professor Weix of the Institute of Psychiatry, King's College London. This is the brainchild of the American Psychiatric Association, and it contains descriptions, symptoms, and other criteria for diagnosing mental disorders. And this then becomes the law of the land. So, my thoughts, well, as I prove beyond a shadow of a doubt when confronting these morons, there is no science. Let me repeat that. As a scientist, I will tell you there is zero science in any of these descriptions and diagnoses. It is the pharmaceutical industry capturing more client base by making completely normal behavior into a disease, and having a legislative body, whether it's the state of New York, totally corrupt, not even worth mentioning anymore when you mention New York, New Jersey, it's just a cesspool. They will go along with whatever the psychiatrists say. Then the Medicare and Medicaid and the VA will pay for the treatment if there's a code. Now, the U.S. Public Health Service designated the American Medical Association a completely corrupt organization and found, having been found guilty of the crime of restraint of trade, and they violated the Sherman Antitrust Act when they tried to destroy the field of chiropractic. And the reason I'm number one on the enemies list of the pharmaceutical industry and the AMA is because I'm the one who brought that information public. Documents were released, and a group of chiropractors, very brave chiropractors, then sued the AMA and the 11 largest medical organizations in the United States. Their guilt was upheld to the Supreme Court, and they had to pay the chiropractors some money, which went into an educational fund. But they were forbidden from thereafter for denying proper acknowledgement to this field of chiropractic. They could no longer call it an unscientific cult and not allow the patients to be using public hospitals to get radiation or x-rays taken or to be covered under insurance. Everything the AMA did was a fraud. Everything. A real cesspool. So I slammed them, and I slammed them hard. I mean, I did not hold back. Many people in this audience, chiropractors or their patients, know that over 2 million copies of my article were circulated amongst the chiropractors in the United States. And we're guesstimating that anywhere from, at the low end, 3 million, the high end 5 million Americans who visit chiropractors read the articles. They were given out in every chiropractor's office in the United States. Then I was invited to speak with 10,000 chiropractors at their annual convention at one group, and then 5,000 other, and continue to show other things beyond what I had written in two separate articles. Well, needless to say, when you end up embarrassing the AMA and you bring the 11 largest medical organizations into court and they're all found guilty, and the New York Times puts a tiny little thing about their guilt, but nothing about acknowledging the legitimacy of healing through chiropractic, which is completely legitimate. You have two groups in chiropractic. You have the straights, who just do subluxations, and you have the mixed, which do nutrition. In fact, I was the person who brought the first accredited program in the United States to any chiropractic school with Dr. Chester Wilk at the New York College of Chiropractic on Long Island. And it took us 2 years, and we created a curriculum, and it was passed. And so many will not know this, but if you're taking a course in nutrition for credit as a chiropractor, I'm the one who created that. So anyhow, I've done a lot to try to help chiropractic, and because I consider it a very legitimate profession that helps and heals, and they're very motivated and very smart. And yet today, it's as if we've won nothing, because the quackbusters have taken over from the AMA, even using many of their files. I have that because I'm suing one right now in discovery. That's what tears a case apart. When you get people into discovery, you can, oh man, anything they got hidden, it comes out. In any case, many of the codes that are used by the AMA exclude all holistic and complementary healing. So if you're using chelation therapy or homeopathy or, let's say, acupuncture or herbs or intravenous vitamin drips or ozone, the things we know really help a person, they're not coded. Anything not coded isn't paid for by an insurance company. And since doctors want to make sure that they're in compliance, because if they're not in compliance with that code, they could get almost nothing. In fact, I was just upstairs reviewing and editing the new film Death by Medicine, and one MD PhD said that he has received as little as 9 cents for treating a patient for an hour and helping the patient, because how he treated that patient holistically was not coded. So now, let's connect the dots here. Here you have a completely fraudulent organization with no science whatsoever, psychiatry and their American Psychiatric Association, completely consummated in a very manipulative way with the pharmaceutical industry to promote the dubious idea that if a baby smiles and then cries, that's a disorder. Well, that would mean that every single baby would now be labeled with a disorder, which would allow the doctor, without any thought or qualms, to give it a prescription. And because it's labeled and it's coded, you won't have our Surgeon General, the head of... In fact, you won't have a single employee in the entire federal, state, or local healthcare system challenge these, because if you do, you are excluded, threatened, intimidated, as happened to Dr. Graham, who's also in the film. And he tells us how this works. So what we have is, we have on the one hand the American public deserving and needing quality health care, but when they go to get any health care, insured or not, there's a high probability that what they're getting is unscientific health care that can injure, hurt them, kill them. No one will be held accountable. Nobody will be told about this. You'll just be toe-tagged and put in the ground someplace. Nothing will change. That's how utterly corrupt our entire healthcare system in the United States is. So now we have coming at us, and I'm giving you a heads up, a whole new series of diagnoses that if you do what I'm doing right now, using a public forum to challenge institutions, they will say that that is authority defiance disorder. I would then be given a psychiatric diagnosis. Now, depending upon the power of the laws in place, they will move then to try to show that, and they'll have Hillary Clinton leading the charge on this. What a dysfunctional group of people we have in our country. My God. And we will have people say, in order to help the people who have these mental problems from hurting themselves or others, we need to get them into treatment. Now, they're not always willing to go into treatment. So what we need to do is we need to make sure that there's mandatory treatment for their benefit and society's. We saw this now with their movement to get every single person in America tested for HIV. And if they test positive, which a lot would, who have no HIV, they have measles, malaria they may have had, pregnancy, arthritis, liver problems, then those people would be forced to take medication. That's where this is going. And of course, if they're going to have people labeled as defiant and all forms of disorders, start in the White House, then go to Congress, then the Supreme Court. And the good news is, before you get to the rest of the American public, we wouldn't have any authorities left to promote these stupid and vile laws that we don't need. So that's my thoughts on that. Anyhow, you'll see all this come forth from a lot of different experts in the near future, so it's right here. And wouldn't it be interesting that those people in England at King's College and psychiatrists at King's College are saying, hey, something's terribly wrong here. Quote, scientists said psychosis risk syndrome diagnosis was particularly worrying since it could falsely label young people who have no risk of developing an illness. It's a bit like telling, quote, 10 people with a common cold that they are, quote, at risk of pneumonia syndrome when only one is likely to get sick. The American Psychiatric Association did not immediately respond to a request for a comment because they were all sitting in chairs getting mainlined with Valium. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome you. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go to a few other interesting things. Quote, the U.S. fails to account for Iraq reconstruction billions. This is only a paragraph, but it's worth hearing. A federal watchdog has criticized U.S. military for failing to account properly for billions of dollars it received to help rebuild Iraq. The Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction says the U.S. Department of Defense is unable to account for 96% of the money it was given. That's $9 billion. It's missing. Why should we be surprised about anything? My God. Why doesn't Obama and the rest of the people in power, who would never last 3 minutes in a debate with anybody with a brain, why don't they just ask Americans to take all their life savings and just go out and give it to the local mob figure. You know, go over and give it to Big Sammy. Because it has about as much value in what will come from it as giving one more dollar to any war, anywhere. It is a waste. And what offends me is when I realize that we can't put a homeless vet into a hospital or buy them food or get them some good quality mental health care so they can reestablish a normal relationship, that we don't have a penny for. So they're sleeping in pup tents or under benches or in little tunnels under the city. But we have $9 billion in one group of money that is simply missing. There's $350 billion that we've given. And give you one example of this. There's a simple water purification treatment plant. Relatively straightforward and simple thing to do. If you were to build this in any town in the United States, it would take about 3 months. All right, there's not a whole lot to it. If you understand, the effluent comes in, you filter it 3 to 4 times with different chemicals and break it down, and then you take what you the matter that is solidified out onto barges. That's what it is. They've already spent over $175 million and haven't been able to hook up the system to a single house. So they simply abandon it. Where did the $175 million go? And why is it that it's done every single day, everywhere in Iraq? They can't build water purification. They can't build electricity. So the average citizen gets 1 hour of electricity today in Iraq. And if you're rich, you can get 6 hours a day. And this is in 120 degrees sweltering heat. Imagine no air conditioning. So anyhow, that shouldn't surprise us. Now, separately, this is an important report. A research study on the cause of the rise in cancer and birth defects in Iraq shows trace of chemicals and radioactive ammunition used by U.S.-led troops in war-torn countries. A study by Iraq's Environmental Ministry indicates that cities targeted by the U.S. and its allies during the wars from 1991 and 2003 show unmistakably higher rates of cancer cases and genetic mutations. Quote, in 1991 and again in 2003, there have been used some rockets headed with depleted uranium, and they were fired from tanks and vehicles that belonged to the United States. And that's where these people are ending up getting these mutations and rare cancers. I reported on this, if you remember, in Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Rome, where we showed that, and we showed the deformed babies by the thousands, where parents are afraid to have a child because of depleted uranium. Well, the Department of Defense has denied any negative consequence of depleted uranium. I'll show you how the bureaucrats in Washington do stuff. It must take 14 of them from graduating from Georgetown University to get their head together, come up with a collective IQ about 7 to figure this out. They take particles, little shreds of depleted uranium casing, and they implant it in mice. The mice don't get radioactive. So they say, see, there's no radioactivity in depleted uranium. But if they heated that at the same temperature that it was fired at, that it explodes and microcrystallizes, then the rat gets radiation. So they changed how they measured the depleted uranium so they could lie to the public. And also, you thought our government was interested in cleaning up the environment? Global warming? No. No, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid emerged from a meeting of the Democratic caucus without support for even a severely weakened and scaled back emissions control. So the United States to the world, the message is, we're going to keep polluting and we're going to keep doing whatever we want and we'll keep believing in the myth that somehow this is not going to have a consequence. But we want you and the rest of the world to be energetically responsible. Just don't ask us to do it. That's how much power corporations have had. And also, one more thing here, the lobbyist, well, this is from ProPublica, Sasha Kavkin. Asbestos, quote, has been known to cause debilitating and often fatal diseases such as lung cancer, mesothelioma, aspinosis. It's banned or restricted in 52 countries, and its use has plummeted in the United States since its peak in the 1970s. But since the mid-1980s, a global network of lobbyists has spent nearly $100 million to maintain a market for asbestos, according to the Center for Public Integrity. Borrowing a page from the tobacco industry, these trade associations have funded scientists whose studies raise doubts about the health risk of asbestos and have preserved significant sales by focusing on the developing world. So, in India, asbestos use is booming among the rural poor. In Brazil, where one federal inspector has battled the industry for a quarter century, it's booming. In Russia, which produces nearly 1 million tons of asbestos each year, and in China, the world's biggest asbestos consumer. Of course, the Chinese don't give a damn about their people. They have so many. What's killing off 500 million people? You kill half the people in China if you're one of the communist members there, and you could care less. They're just fodder. What a corrupt country. Have I missed offending anyone today? Is there anyone, someone in Southwest Utah?
There's someone out there.
The only people who legally should be allowed to use, wear, and consume asbestos are lawyers. It should be no one else. And they're toady lobbyists. Man, if you can't create a real life, then become a lobbyist. And now over to Richard Polonisky. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Doing great.
Gary, I wanted to talk a little bit about the recent work we've done with regard to the homeless Gulf War vets that's just afflicting so many of these brave men and women who really made such a sacrifice and are paying for it now in unfortunate ways. And you know, the video that we put together was really meaningful on many fronts, not just in the act of doing it, but in terms of the response we've been getting from it as well, and hopefully a lot of the help that's going to come to these people from this. The word's got to get out there. And if you haven't seen this yet, please go to YouTube, youtube.com/GaryNullTV. If you go under playlist, it's Who is Killing America's Veterans? And the title of the series, part 1 to 6, is U.S. Government to Gulf War Vets, /Drop Dead. It's a very strong title, but if you take a look at this, it'll be the best 45 minutes you can spend in a day. Really meaningful, really heart-tugging. At the very least, take a look at the first part, first 10 minutes. You'll get to see quite a bit of what's going on there. And we just released another one yesterday. This is a newer part featuring a homeless veteran named Robert and a director of a homeless organization down in Florida. And that one's entitled Homeless American Veterans, A Downward Spiral. So again, youtube.com/GaryNullTV, the playlist Who is Killing America's Veterans, and also if you just go on YouTube and search for Homeless American Veterans, A Downward Spiral, you'll get to see that as well.
We also have two major, original, in-depth, scholarly, investigative reports. And the reason I didn't write these is I might write a popular magazine piece, is because I want the article to be taken seriously, so I did it as if it were a scholarly research report with full footnotes and quotes and attributions. And this way, every member of Congress has received it. Every one of the 50 state legislative bodies members have received it. All 50 governors, 7,000 members of the American media have received it. 32,000 complementary holistic healers, medical doctors, nurses, have received, chiropractors have received it. And today, this morning, I got off the phone with one of the Veterans Organization's executive directors who saw it. He was blown away by it. He said, "What can we do to help in the cause?" And I said, "Network. Open doors and network." I said, as long as you keep going to Capitol Hill with your lawyers and your experts, nothing will happen. It's a dog and pony show, and you know it. He agreed. I said, but you get the average American to see the kind of suffering that is going on that could have been prevented and has been hidden and not covered by the mainstream media, that will get their attention. And when you get the average person's attention and it becomes a cause, then you can't put that genie back in the bottle, and then we can begin to help these homeless vets and these sick vets who need help. So he opened the door for four other major organizations. I'm speaking with them today, and then we're planning on having a major rally where he wants me to be the keynote speaker, where I will hand out the three separate documentaries I've done free to the whether it's 5,000 people or 10,000 people. I'll give everyone a free documentary and the articles in Washington in October. So these are heads of vet organizations who have told me they've been ineffective because legislators are pathological liars. They'll sit and ask you questions, pro or con an issue, won't do a darn thing about it. But you got to get the public on your side. You got to let them know this is important because these are their sons and daughters. And though I'm against wars, these wars, I was not against our participating in the Second World War. It was the important war because of the tyranny of Hitler and Mussolini and Japan, and the suffering they caused to people throughout the world. and you have to stand up to that. But Vietnam, Korean War, no. First Gulf War, no. Second Gulf War, no. These are not essential to our national security. But the people who go to serve, whatever their motives, they're still human beings, they're American, they deserve to be supported on the back end of that adventure. Okay? Good. Thank you, Richard.
Absolutely.
All right, and what else?
I've got some, these are just some of the people who've seen some of these videos, just a little bit of feedback from them.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, absolutely. So first off here, and this again from people who saw Who is Killing America's Veterans.
Who's it from? What's her name?
Desert Stars 1002.
Oh, these are just the people. The okay.
Yeah, people on there. Right. It says, this is a must-see. It is imperative that citizens become aware of the plight of our veterans, whether they served in war or not. These men and women were and are willing to give their lives at a moment's notice for us and our country. Julie's News writes, Gary, as usual, hits it on the head. Tragic but true. We must expose this on a wider scale and stop pretending that this doesn't exist. Thank you, Gary. Now maybe we can begin the process of healing.
Those are good. Anyone listening from Los Angeles who has any background or experience working in film or with homeless, I'll be filming out there next week. I'm going to be taking our cameras to L.A. for a day just to film homeless vets. Now, I've already completed the filming of the new poor in America. I've gone out to the farms. I've gone clear across to America. Not vets, just regular people. That's already done. That's our next project up. And this is just for vets. I just read an article this morning. We live with ghosts and demons. Soldiers who took part in torture suffer from severe post-traumatic stress disorder. This is from, I'll read this tomorrow, from Justin Sharrock from Alternet, about once a person participates in torture as one of the torturers, what it does to him. Interesting piece. So we will continue to make this an issue, just as we did vaccines. People know that we do more original investigative reporting than any other radio or television program in the United States. This is the one place where people know we cannot be compromised on truth, and we will give you the truth, and we will stand up and share it with you. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Gary.
Now, we're going to go to our guest. I was just told our guest is standing by in a minute. She'll be up, Dr. Nancy Turner Banks. But for people in the audience, as you know, I am thinning the inventory for two reasons. I believe over the next 2 to 5 years that about 70% of Americans are going to be economically challenged. I do not see some cataclysmic event. Instead, I see it as slow, imperceptible, where you put one dish in the sink, and then two, and then a week later you got 15, and then a month later there's no room left in your kitchen to put a dirty plate. Someone comes in and they see it. And they say, my goodness, you're living this kind of filth? And the person says, oh, I didn't mind it. Well, when you don't have money and you start to adapt and you adapt to a lifestyle without the financial security that you've been used to, and you realize how few people are there to support you, and sometimes no one, then you start to see the changes that are necessary. So I'm trying, and I've been trying as best I can, to show you the positive things you can do, but to be fully aware that the misinformation, the misguided motives of people in television who want to believe that we're turning it all around, the stock market's up, isn't this all good? And I look at a fundamental crisis. I see that we have become a debt nation. We are technically, we're bankrupt. We will never be able to pay off the debt that we've accumulated. Underfunded and unfunded entitlements are going to cause major suffering for a lot of people when the day of reckoning comes and you start getting less and you're already living on less. The social fabric for those in the, let's say, the middle class are going to be stretched, frayed, and broken. If you're rich, super rich, and upper middle class, nothing will change. Things will be pretty much what they are. You'll be distracted and entertained. You'll continue to live your consumer-based life. You won't be engaging in any social activities that cause you to challenge the authority figures. They will have all the power. But for the rest of America, you won't. And you will see this. You'll see the spreading of gangs. As of today, there's over 1.2 million members of gangs. That will go to 10 million members of gangs in the United States, I believe, in the next 5 years. Because the poorer someone is, the less they're able to feed themselves and their family, the more likely they are, out of desperation, to turn to the easy money from gangs and drugs, etc. So we're in for a bumpy ride. So I'm one of those people who say, get ahead of the curve. If I'm wrong, and I really hope I'm wrong, then gee whiz, people have just made positive changes in their lives that can only help them. There's no downside to doing the right thing. So the fact I've created over 350 different products, I don't see that people are going to be able to afford these in the future. Or even I would be able to afford to manufacture and store them. So I'm unloading my inventories now so that I don't have to rush and panic and do it later. I like to do things in a reasonable and responsible way. But now it's very successful. People are, I'm out of a lot of stuff. As of today, the current formula, the formula you've been using for almost 20 years, the green stuff and greens grains, is going out. There will no longer be any of this formula left. I've got them both in my hand here. Green stuff, the wheatgrass, spirulina, vegetables, and the greens and grains, all the raw, sprouted, all-natural grains, legumes, and everything that's in both of these. These current formulas are at the end. This is it. So I'm offering that 70% discount. When they're gone, they will be gone forever, which might be today or certainly within the next week. Now, again, remember, I will be making fewer products, but what I consider integrative, better products. I've taken it to another level. It's a level that does not exist anywhere, and it's taken me a long time to figure out how I do this. And I'm keeping what amounts to 52 products that people want, and I'll be changing formulas. But for people who want the deal they will never get again, today only 70% off greens and grains and green stuff, two different products. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. When these two formulas are gone, they're gone forever. Okay, we're going to our guests in just a moment. Please stay with us.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. I wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, and I know.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Joining me on our conference phone from Maryland is Dr. Nancy Turner Banks. I gave her bio earlier in the program, and she is here to talk about a recent conference, an international conference, that discussed AIDS, and we'd like to see her perspective on it. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, hi, Gary. How are you? I'm just back from Vienna, Austria, and I was a participant in what is called the AIDS Dissidents conference. As you may know, there was the International AIDS conference that was going on at about the same time. But our conference was fabulous. There were many of the people who have been active in the AIDS community for years, and some new people, and there was some really great information coming out of the conference.
Go through who some of the people were.
Well, Henry Bauer was there, as Henry Bauer has recently written on the epidemiology of the HIV test. And, of course, Peter Duisberg, who is a world-renowned virologist, and he has talked and written extensively about the fact that the HIV virus, which he thinks exists, is a retrovirus, and even if it does exist, it's benign. It can't possibly cause any disease. And the other thing he spoke about was the fact that the African population during this last 25 years of this so-called crisis in Africa has doubled from 400 to 800 million.
And this at a time when we were told by the World Health Organization that it would be decimated, it would be a wasteland because so many people would die.
Exactly. And even in those countries such as Uganda, where they said there was such a high infectivity rate, that the population has increased dramatically. So that's another one of those predictions that the AIDS group doesn't seem to want to focus on too much.
Well, they won't debate anyone. We've tried. I took a camera crew. We went to we went to Switzerland when they had their conference there. We waited in line patiently, and they just walked right by us. They were very dismissive. I brought Professor Stefan Lanka. Have you met him?
I know his work, but he wasn't at this conference.
Well, he's a professor of virology, and he was there to challenge him. He, unlike Duisberg, he does not believe that they have ever isolated the full virus, and therefore their basic premise that HIV is the cause of 30 conditions is flawed, and he simply asks, show us the evidence. And they all say, well, what evidence? There's tons of evidence. And others have said the same thing. If you say there's tons, please show it.
Well, that's the problem. If you go back to the original work, which is what you have to do, you can't find it. But one of the things that I really got that wasn't so clear to me before is this really is not about science, it's about propaganda. The other AIDS conference, the keynote speaker was, the two keynote speakers were Whoopi Goldberg and Bill Clinton. And of course Bill Clinton has been a front for the pharmaceutical companies, and he gets $100,000 for every speech, I understand. So basically, it's a major propaganda campaign to make people get involved with these pharmaceuticals. The people who were at the other conference, they had big bags from the World Bank and from the pharmaceutical companies. So these people are they're supporting their economic interest. And I think that the science is weak, and they will never debate the science.
Well, I was filming the lead Orthodox AIDS researcher in Europe, in London. And during our interview, I asked him, do you have a laboratory that is isolating the HIV virus? He saw tons of it. I said, would you please take us there and show it to me? And yes, of course I would. He never did. And he wouldn't. And I asked him politely several times, could you show me an HIV virus? And if I were to take a person off, because we've done this. We've done this at the Institute of Applied Biology. You know, someone would be declared having full-blown AIDS, and we'd do a blood analysis. Take blood out of the arm and look under the microscope, and you cannot find this HIV virus. Well, it doesn't meet Koch's postulates. How can you have someone dying or sick if they do not have enough of a given item that is known to cause that?
Exactly. And even the most recent research that I was able to find, I think a study from 2008, which they were trying to identify what they called HIV in the lymphocytes of people who were ill. And, of course, they couldn't identify enough of what they were calling HIV in the lymphocytes to really account for any kind of disease process because, as you know, in order for a particular agent to kill off the cells, a certain number of cells have to die off or you're not going to have a die-off of those cells. But the whole issue of this is they try to confuse people, because clearly the immune system has a humoral system and a cell mediated system, a TH1 and TH2, and the immune system is still functioning at some level because the antibodies are elevated. It's the cell mediated immunity which is not functioning adequately, and there are certainly other reasons for that, and those were some of the things that people talked about. So even that confusion, I think they try to confuse people, because we do know now that the reason that people were showing up with decreased white blood cells but increased antibodies is because these white blood cells are differentiated into two forms. And the humoral antibodies, which were making elevated antibodies, was working fine. And that continues to be the case until people very late in the disease.
Well, as an example, we took 100 vegetarian, non-drinking, non-smoking runners, marathon runners, and we took their blood, we took their T cell count before they started training, and then 1 week before the New York City Marathon, 1 week before, because of 1 year of extensive training, the average T cells were under 200. So if they would have presented at that time to a medical doctor saying, I'm suffering from fatigue and muscle aches, and the T cells were under 200, they'd have gotten an AIDS diagnosis.
Well, exactly. So I think the other thing that I really have come to realize, that the immune deficiency is another sort of canard, because it's the effect. And one of the things that the group talked about was the cause. And so the cause basically is considered an energy deficiency problem. And there is a defect in where the cells make their energy in a little organelle called the mitochondria. And so I think that if one begins to talk about cellular energy metabolism, then you can not only talk about AIDS or cancer or Alzheimer's or diabetes or hypertension, but all the diseases, the chronic diseases that seem to be plaguing Western civilization.
Let's continue that thread. Originally, we were told that HIV was sexually transmitted, and yet we have people who've never had sex in Africa, women who've never had sex, who are told, oh, you must have been sexually promiscuous, you have the virus. Then they're stigmatized by their family and friends. They're frequently abused. Then they're immediately put on some of the most toxic chemotherapy agents ever. Now, I've collected over 400 peer-reviewed studies showing, and published articles, showing that the drugs they're giving will cause liver failure, kidney failure, will cause leukemia, all forms of terrible side effects. If you were an Olympic athlete, they would cause this. Why in the world, if you're going to give someone who may suffer from malnutrition or maybe a secondary infection like post-malaria or tuberculosis or schistosomiasis, why would you give that person something that can only further destroy their immune system?
Well, I think you just raised an issue which I think is going to come back and haunt the pharmaceutical industry at some point, because they're not going to have either a scientific or a legal leg to stand on. But what happens is that, for example, this first drug, AZT was a drug that directly attacked the mitochondria, which is where the energy is produced in the cell. So if you have people already who have been using toxic drugs and having a toxic lifestyle for many, many years, or who are nutritionally deficient and energetically deficient, and then you give them more drugs that attack your energy system, you're only going to have a consequence that is going to see more illness and more death. So the whole premise of how these people are not being metabolically supplemented and given these toxic drugs is, I frankly think, is criminal.
Why don't we go to a little different area here and explore this? When you have the vast majority of Americans who know no one who has been infected after all these years, then why does the media still say an infectious disease? When we have studies showing that men who died of full-blown AIDS, when their semen was checked, they couldn't find this HIV virus in their cells. Now, we've had an epidemic of teenage pregnancies and sexually transmitted diseases in young people. And why don't we have at the same time, if it's a sexually transmitted disease, HIV, why don't we have all these young people who now have syphilis and gonorrhea and human papillomavirus and chlamydia? Why don't we see HIV infection in them?
Well, that was Marco Ruggiero, who, as you know, is one of the longtime AIDS dissidents from Italy. When he gave his speech, that was exactly the point that he was making. He lives in a region of Italy called Tuscany, and they, again, in that area, did an epidemiological study, and they looked at the sexual habits of the teenagers, the 20s and 30s and 40s. And if in fact, HIV is sexually transmitted, again, you would expect to see it in the teenagers in the early 20s, because that seems to be the most sexually active group according to their studies. And according to all the studies that have been done epidemiologically on sexual transmission, there's no evidence that this is a sexually transmitted disease. The most they could say is that the male to female transmission rate is 1 in 1,000, and the female to male is 1 in 10,000. That's almost non-existent. So I think that the idea that they're continuing to say that this is sexual transmitted disease is just more of the propaganda war.
I see this as probably the single most successful public relations coup of any group, and the group was the Fast Track Gays. Instead, and the gay organizations, because we've had gay dissident journalists on this program talking about what it means to tell the truth and how they're lambasted, because these groups get vast amounts of money. You'll see them at every one of these AIDS conferences. They'll be at tables. Their foundations are supported by Burroughs Wellcome, the Wellcome Foundation that makes AZT. And if you look back at what really was the progenitor of all this, it was the fast-track lifestyle, the paupers, amine nitrate. I interviewed people. I interviewed over 2,200 people. Over a large majority of them back then were taking as many as 20 amine nitrate a night. All you have to do is look in the scientific literature what happens with amine nitrate abuse, and you see Kaposi sarcoma, pneumocystis, pneumonia. Now, what was the first and second condition you found in people with AIDS? Pneumocystis, pneumonia. And thrush, and then Kaposi sarcoma.
Exactly.
They're refusing to look at the truth because it's now a $300 billion money pit. Doesn't it offend you on some level that cancer is real, heart disease is real, diabetes is real, arthritis is real, and yet we spend more money on AIDS than those four combined?
I think that it's outrageous. But it has. But I think that there are clearly, when I see the World Bank and I see someone like Bill Clinton at this International AIDS Conference, it's clear to me that there are much broader aspects to this particular. I call it a psychological operation. As I said, the science seems to be irrelevant. It seems to be that for some reason a group of people want this particular disease, and it has multiple functions. For example, I have a little grandniece who's 12 years old, and now in school they talk about sexual kinds of things that they would never have dared to talk about in the past.
Hold your thoughts for 1 second. We want to say goodbye to our WMYE audience, and you can continue to listen to this discussion, which will go on for another 7 minutes, on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or over the internet on GaryNall.com. Please continue.
And then the other big deal is that for Africa, you know, Africa is the richest continent with the poorest people, and their resources are being systematically stolen. But if you can give the impression that they're, you know, the people are dying, they're helpless, they have no you know, they have no way to manage themselves because they're these overtly sexual creatures, then you can create an idea in the Western mind that, oh, well, you know, the Western countries have to be there and they have to manage their resources because these people have no way of managing their resources. So I think part of it, at least in Africa, is a psychological operation. And I think in the West, it's a way to lower some of the sexual mores of the culture. So it functions, it has multiple functions, this particular disease entity. It's just not one thing. It has many, many functions.
Let's take that in this direction. In Africa, we did an analysis of 54 countries, and we found in those that were poor, and mostly in sub-Saharan Africa, mm-hmm. but also in the poor area of Ethiopia mm-hmm. and Somalia, you had the highest a declared incidence of HIV infection, which was not done by blood analysis, but rather, which was a worthless Western blot or ELISA test, but rather by symptoms. The symptoms in those areas where people are already malnourished, fatigue, a non-productive dry cough, a fever, well, that's malaria, that's tuberculosis, and they would go into refugee camps. Now, could you imagine the health status of people living in a refugee camp for a year? And that's where they were getting these numbers. And yet in all other countries, in Egypt, in Libya, in Cape Town, where you have large groups of people, middle class, upper middle class, bureaucrats, professional class, you have no HIV and no AIDS. None. It's only in the poor. And how smart could a disease be to skip over you based upon your economic status?
Especially an infectious disease. But this is the other very big issue for me, because they in Africa they use something. It's what you're describing is called the Bangui definition, and it's a symptom definition. And as you noted, the symptoms are general, they're vague, and they could pertain to any number of diseases which have been endemic for many, many years on the African continent. And so they don't. They're not specific. But the other thing that is very bothersome to me, in Africa, when the tests are done, they are often done in maternity prenatal clinics where pregnancy itself can cross-react with these tests. Because in pregnancy, as you know, the HIV test is an antibody test, and during pregnancy, antibody levels are elevated. So that in itself is a very big problem for me as an obstetrician.
But you're not just an obstetrician, you're also a scientist. And as such, does not it raise a red flag when historically antibody increase for a short period of time in the vast majority of scientific and medical literature shows that the body has met the enemy within, whatever microbe it might be, bacteria, virus, defeated it, created a carbon copy of it so that in the future that circulating antibody is there to forewarn and protect the body. Now we have an antibody that predicts a disease.
Well, that's another thing that I think is the absurdity of this HIV so-called model. It's because they're now telling you that when you're immune, you're going to get ill. But they're also saying, oh, but we're going to have a vaccine. And if you get the vaccine, your antibodies will be elevated. And that way, you'll be protected, except you're going to have the same antibodies you have when you're going to get ill. It's just idiocy.
It's insane. And you know what bothers me? It's not the gallows and the people. I had Robert Gallo on the show. I had Luc Montagnier on the show, and they both hung up when I asked him a hard question. And that didn't surprise me. It's the New York Times. Dr. Gupta. It's all the major medical organizations and medical magazines and the major media. They are virtually complicit in propagandizing the biggest myth. AIDS-defining illnesses have always existed and can be treated with a proper medical paradigm. But putting them under all under the moniker of an HIV alone by itself causing these 30 different conditions, including cervical cancer, is insane.
But not only is it insane, it allows for the lazy practice of medicine, because now the physicians will simply start prescribing heart, and they will ignore the underlying metabolic problems, which you have talked about for years, and they will not compensate these patients. And so now the patients are uncompensated, and one of the things that is being recognized is that more people now are dying from the complications of these drugs than are dying from the so-called AIDS-defining diseases. Now, how long is that going to go on?
Well, it can go on indefinitely, according to the American media, because we choose not to probe what we don't want to know. Because then it would raise questions that we have to deal with. And as long as we don't know something, Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt, said, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. And that's where we're at. We're out of time. Thank you very much, Dr. Nancy Turner-Banks, for being on. And your book is AIDS of Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, the Deadly Virus of International Greed. I'm looking forward to inviting you back to talk about the Deadly Virus of International Greed.
Okay, thank you, Gary. Bye-bye.
Website, www.nancybanksmd.com. By the way, she is a gynecological oncologist. She is an OBYN, board certified, Harvard Medical School. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Now stay tuned for Paradise Parking Lot with Dr. Stephen Barnett here on the Progressive Radio Network, the one place in the world people who still have some gray matter can come and have it stimulated.
Produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee. The reason I know so much about